Welcome to Band of Gamers Podcast, episode number 11. My name is Greylock3491, and this week I'm joined again by my two good friends, DBQ Hams and Osiris Prime. Guys, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, Grey. How are you, Prime?
I'm good. I'm a little tired this evening, but hopefully I can get through this without falling asleep. So just yell at me if you hear me quiet all of a sudden.
You know, I'm sleepy too, so let's get right into it. Let's talk about what we've played this week, and we will start with DBQ Hams. DB, what have you been playing this week?
So I've been on the road a lot this week for work, which means I've brought my work laptop along and not a whole lot of other gaming devices. But it also means that this week was the week of the official launch of Heroes of the Storm, the Blizzard MOBA that I've been talking probably too much about. So I've been kind of picking away at it. Not anything huge, but again, playing a couple games a day or a night as time allows. The nice fact about it is that there's, you know, games are only 20, 25 minutes, so it doesn't really feel like a big time commitment. I am not sure how long I'll keep playing, I think. It's great. I'm really enjoying it, but it feels kind of like a sports game, right? Like, you play a match, and it's over, and you can get back in and play again, and it's really easy to pick up and play. But there's some progression, but I don't think I'll ever gonna be at a competitive level of ranked play with it, so I'll probably keep playing with it. I did end up dropping down $5 on an intro pack while it was still in beta, and now it's out, and there's a couple packs up on the store, but there's also a retail pack, which is actually a pretty good value for about $20 that gives you 5 characters, all in different classes, so you can kind of play around with stuff. So I played that. Again, that's kind of just been a go-to. But I've also kind of got into, last week I talked about picking up Wolfenstein The New Order. Picked it up a couple weeks ago when the Wolfenstein First Blood or New Blood was up as a downloadable game. Wolfenstein The New Order came out last year. If you haven't played it, it's pretty cheap. I picked my used copy up from Gamefly for $15, and I'm surprised how much I really enjoy the story. The first-person shooter gameplay is pretty solid. I mean, it's a Bethesda game with kind of id prodigy, you know, an id lineage, but it's actually made by a development team called Machine Games, which they were all made up of former Starbreeze guys, and the Starbreeze guys did Riddick, the Escape from Butcher Bay, which we'll talk about later in the show. But they really crafted a really neat kind of alternative history story, so I find myself enjoying it more for the narrative than the actual gunplay. So that's what I've been playing. How about you, Prime? It looks like you've been playing a little bit of gunplay as well.
Yeah, so unfortunately I haven't played too much during the week, so most of this is from last weekend. So I played Strider, going back, doing my backlog gaming, which I also streamed on Twitch at the time, and I kind of threw it over on my YouTube channel now. Not really sure how far along I am in that game. I think I've mentioned that a few times now, but it just kind of seems to keep going and going, which is kind of surprising, because it's just, you know, just a small downloadable game, so... But it's good. I like it. I had to get used to the kind of running back and forth, kind of, you know, Metroid Castlevania style, where you can kind of do something in one section, go, you know, on the other side of the map, then you got to come back and forth. So it was kind of annoying at first, but I've gotten used to it now, so it's not too bad. And then I have played The Witcher 3 a little bit last weekend, and then most of my time actually when I was playing last weekend was on Advanced Warfare, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, because they had the double experience points weekend, so I was trying to level up there, trying to get through to my third prestige, I believe I'm about to hit. So I think I got up to like level 48, maybe 49. So I should, and the level cap is 50, so every time you hit 50, you can prestige. And basically, what you can do at that point is, well, when you prestige, all your guns and everything get reset as far as like attachment and stuff. But you can pick like one or two things that you can hold over. So mostly I've picked like perks and stuff like that. So it's not too bad. I kind of like doing that because it's kind of fun to unlock everything again, at least for me. And then one last thing that I've been playing kind of throughout the week is Lara Croft Relic Run, excuse me, which is actually a mobile game. Which most of the time I don't mention the mobile games I play just because they're kind of offshoots. But this one I thought was kind of interesting just because it was just a running type game where you're running down a path. All you can do is move left and right and just kind of dodge and or I should say duck and then jump obstacles. But I just thought it was kind of interesting because it was Lara Croft and it's pretty well made. It's the graphics are pretty good. I'm playing on an iPhone 6, so it runs it's smooth. So it's pretty cool. There's a little bit of shooting mechanics in it. Basically, when you see an enemy on the screen, it kind of she automatically pulls her guns out and starts to look to either the right or left. And all you do is just tap on the enemy to shoot them. So it's pretty simple, but it's still pretty cool. And that's pretty much it. How about you, Gray?
Well, I played some Destiny House of Wolves, and I'm wondering, and I enjoy it, don't get me wrong, I enjoy it, and I enjoy doing the Queen's bounties and whatnot, but haven't got into the prison yet. And I'm just feeling like the whole thing with Xur, I feel like I'm grinding now. I mean, I can only get 6 coins. It's Omnigul this week. Last week it was the really hard new strike for House of Wolves, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to lose interest quickly if the strikes are just going to be super hard just to get 6 coins. So I don't know. I just probably spent 45 minutes of my life doing Omnigul again, and I got 6 coins. And it's like, really? So I don't know. I don't know. I'm looking forward to being able to do prisons as soon as I finish the Queen's bounties. But we'll see. Any of you guys play in House of Wolves?
I haven't. I did notice that they, just like in the last DLC, that they upped the levels for the Nightfall strikes, right? So that the highest level at Nightfall is 32 now versus, no, 34 now versus 32. Is that, how is that strange coin breakdown? Because I remember I was getting 9 strange coins on a run at 30, and now is it up to 32? Or what's that, how is that tiered, Gray?
Yeah, so 32 now gets you 9, but they did something prior to House of Wolves. They made the strikes, in my opinion, harder. And so I stopped running them at 30 because they just seemed intensely harder. And so now I'm doing them at 30 again, and I have a level 32 character, but it just takes too long. I mean, it just seems like just I don't know. It seems more like grinding, to be honest with you. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to prisons, but we'll see. What else did I play this week? Well, I did get ODST codes went out. I got my ODST code. I downloaded and installed it. Didn't really get to
Nice.
play it. It's located underneath Halo 3, so it's the single player. And
Yeah,
go
that was
ahead.
tricky for me to find too. No, that was tricky to find.
Yeah, and so ODST, I have to go back and look. When you bought ODST, you got this single player campaign, which I thought was cool. And then you got Firefight, which is kind of a horde mode. And then you got all the Halo 3 maps. So Master Chief Collection already had all the Halo 3 multiplayer maps. And, 343 said they weren't going to do Firefight. I don't know why, but maybe they'll add that later. But I'm looking forward to the campaign. There were some videos up on Microsoft's website talking about it. They had one of the original, the guy who actually who was the creative director on ODST, kind of doing the commentary. And yeah, so I'm excited to play it again. I think it takes place like halfway through Halo 2, I think. So I don't know if you would play through Halo 2 and then play ODST and then play Halo 3. But looking forward to trying it out. Did you try it out, DB? Did you actually fire it up?
No, I didn't. I downloaded it as well. I was excited because I had never played ODST on the 360 because I'd never owned the 360. So I'm excited to play it. It does take place, as somebody who's, listened and read some of the Halo fiction, it does take place during between 2 and 3, or at least in some of the events, because right, it's on New Mombasa. Is that where it takes place on?
Yes.
But yeah. What I was surprised at, looking at like a quick look on other sites, how I forget how much the character that's voiced by Nathan Fillion actually looks like Nathan Fillion. You know, this was years before he was on Castle every week, and he was only on Niches and on Firefly. So it's kind of funny to see some of those voice actors take on the likeness of the characters.
Yeah, I kind of thought all the voice actors looked like their characters in the game. It was kind of funny because the ones that had faces, you know, everybody except the rookie, I thought they looked very much like their real life actors, which I thought was kind of odd. I also got Heroes of the Storm downloaded and installed. Haven't fired it up, but it's installed and downloaded. Then I watched Osiris's Prime's Strider stream and was watching him take out all the bad guys. That was fun. And I actually been doing some audiobooks. I got into this this book. It was by a kind of a junior author. I shouldn't say junior author, but, you know, not a well-known author, you know, maybe a hobbyist writer who's now written more and more books. But the name of the book was Moonwreck, and it was nothing like Apollo 17. I think the movie was Apollo 17 or 18. It was nothing like that, but it was really cool. And so I listened to the third audiobook because I had an eight-hour commute one day, and then it sucked me into the fourth audiobook, so I'm into the fourth audiobook now. So not really gaming, but it really reminds me of the Halo verse in many ways, the Halo universe and other game universes, how there's fleets of ships and there's aliens that are taller and stronger and you know, more better technology, and there's some AIs in the game that are kind of like Cortana, and then there's other AIs that are like evil rulers of the universe, and just some great books. So if you're looking for a good sci-fi series, Moonwreck, the Slaver Wars series is pretty interesting. And with that is what I did this week. Now let's move into our next topic, which is news items of the week that we want to talk about. And we'll start this time with Osiris Prime. Prime, why don't you tell us about the news stories in gaming that caught your eye this week?
All right, yep. I got some gaming announcements this week. And first up is something in the near future, which is just a few weeks, actually, or a couple weeks, is PlanetSide 2 for the PS4, which is going to be coming out June 23rd. And I actually forgot to put the link on here, but there's a going to be a beta, I guess, for it, which is, I don't know if you want to call it a beta, I guess maybe more of a stress test for the servers, but I can't remember what the date was for that, but that's supposed to happen, I would assume, within the next week or so, and then the game itself would come out on the 23rd. So I know, DB, you have a PS4. Are you looking forward to that, or do you know anything about that game?
I don't have a PS4. Which game?
Oh, I thought you did have it. I'm sorry.
No, I did, and I actually got rid of it in order to get my Xbox One. So, PlanetSide 2, it has been. PlanetSide 2 has been announced, jeepers, back on the main stage when the PS4 was announced, and Jack Tretton was laying all the smackdown on Xbox that PlanetSide was one of their free-to-play games that was coming. So it's nice to see that it's finally kind of making its way through.
Yeah, okay. And obviously that's because I'm sleepy and I totally forgot you said that, that you had sold it off. So next up is actually Gaming Machine. It's the Alien. They actually announced the Alienware Steam Machine, which if you pre-order it, you can get it. It'll be shipped to you on October 16th. And that's going to, you can order it from their site, and I believe you can pre-order from GameStop too. So you can get it October 16th if you pre-order it. And if you don't pre-order it, you're just going to, you know, wait until it comes out in stores. You'll have to wait till November 10th. So was anybody excited about the Steam Machines at all? I know it was kind of a big thing for a while, but until I saw that story, I really hadn't seen anything else from, you know, anything about the Steam Machines.
They've been kind of poking at it every, what's the conference that happens in the Entertainment Expo that happens in January. You know, I think the controller could be really interesting to see how that plays out. Again, I think it's going to be a matter of how this streaming connection works out, and kind of like what we talked about last week with the Oculus Rift. You know, if you have a hefty gaming PC somewhere in your home, then this may be a good alternative to stream up to your TV in the living room.
You know, I think at this point, you know, I would wait to see how it compares to the, I don't know if they call it the Area 51 or what Alienware machine it was that is the same thing as a Steam machine, except with Windows 7 running on it and with an Xbox controller. So that machine actually did extremely favorable when compared to the PS4 and Xbox One. But it'll be interesting to see if they squeezed out some more, you know, frames per second and performance by running the Steam OS. At this point, I got a laptop. You know, I don't know if I would need another computer to play on the big screen. So yeah, I think you know, there's definitely a small crowd out there that's super excited about this, but I'm not.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this on the last podcast that my machine's like my PC right now is I have a desktop and I have a laptop, but the laptop is. Probably almost as old as the PC is almost 10 years old. So, I don't know, it might be something that I could look at, because I usually, once I buy a new machine or PC, that's when I kind of get back into PC gaming. So this might be something interesting to see how it is. They didn't mention the price in the article. It's probably something I can look up now, because you can pre-order now. It'd be interesting to see what the price comes out to. And also in that same article, they mentioned CyberPower Steam Machine. But all they mentioned is that you can buy it or pre-order it directly from their website. So I don't know if it's the same time frame, like that October 16th pre-order thing. They didn't really go into detail on that. So next up, we have Fallout 4 was finally announced officially after months and months of speculation. Now, I know for me, and I've probably mentioned it before on this podcast, but I couldn't get into Fallout 3. I played it. I tried to play it. To be honest, the most interesting part of it was when you're in the vault, just kind of story-wise. And then just when I got outside the vault and, you know, just going through the countryside and going through the different cities and stuff, I think it was just the drab atmosphere, the drab color, and just everything was run down, just kind of that brownish, you know, tannish color, and I think it just like sucked the life out of me eventually, and I just couldn't take it anymore, so I just kind of stopped playing that, which I was really looking forward to Fallout 3, but, you know, before it had come out, because, you know, it was a Bethesda game, played Oblivion, and, you know, I was super excited for it, but I could not get into it. How about you guys? Did any of you play it, go through it?
So, I put 58 hours into Fallout 3 and some of its expansions. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I modded around with it. I had additional companions with mods. My dog was kind of beefed up and a little more powerful through mods. I played a ton of it and loved it. I really kind of dove into that world. I grew up outside of Maryland for part of my life and spent a lot of time back in D.C., so the landscape of it was familiar enough with me that I could kind of pick out areas, and that was fun. Yeah, so I'm excited about it. You know, I think 58 hours in, I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to see what it is now as it's coming into Boston, it looks like it's going to be. So maybe this is an area gray where you're going to recognize some landscape and some landmarks as well.
You know, I had a lot of friends of my on my friends list on Xbox, really, really got into it and played it an awful lot. I just looking at the landscapes and the reviews and the gameplay trailers, I did other things at that time. So it'll be interesting to see how you like it, DB.
Yeah, it makes me think that this week on the Casual Adult Gamers website, I think it was you, Gray, you posted about favorite games of the last gen, and as I put up there, one of my three favorite games of last gen was Fallout 3, so I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, so there was no release date yet. A lot of people are speculating just from, like tweets and, you know, Facebook posts and stuff like that, that they're getting out of it that it might actually come out this year, but I don't know, that's going to be pretty crowded end of the year if that comes out too. It'll be interesting to see if they actually make it out this year or not. So then, next up, we got XCOM 2, which is the sequel to Enemy Unknown, which is going to come out this year, November 2nd, for the PC. I don't think the first one came out on the consoles, so I don't think that's a big, a big thing that is only coming out on PC.
First one came out on 360 and PS3, and then got ported to iOS as well.
Oh, really? Okay. I wasn't sure about that. I know they had the, there was like that kind of FPS XCOM game that I don't think most people didn't like. I don't know if it was any good actually or not, but I wasn't sure if that the first XCOM, the regular one, came out on the system, so it's good to know. So that was more of like an RTS game, right? The Enemy Unknown?
Yeah, it was kind of like almost like a turn-based strategy game in some ways, where you were kind of moving your person into, you had a team or a group, you're moving them into position, so kind of like like Fire Emblem or Advance Wars on the Game Boy, or Final Fantasy Tactics, kind of in that same vein of you're moving them into certain areas and they have different abilities like a sniper or heavy rifleman. So it was fun. I played it on the PS3. It's a fun game. So one of the things I mentioned about only doing it on PC is that it's going to open up the mod scene and allow the community to kind of create more maps and different campaigns and things like that. So I think that could be interesting.
Cool. How about you, Gray? Did you ever play either the sequel or maybe some of the original XCOM games back in the day on the PC or on the consoles?
You know, no, I missed them. I know they were always raved about, but they just never grabbed me. So, but what I am excited about is your next announcement.
I figured you like this one. I saw you. I think you posted something about this on the Facebook group also. So it was announced that the Nathan Drake Collection is coming out for the PS4. I know initially they didn't have a release date, but I actually just saw that it looks like it's going to come out October 9th. And I guess it popped up on the PS store, the PSN store at some point, I think even before the announcement, I guess. And maybe that's why they had to announce it. So that's going to collect, obviously, it's going to be Uncharted 1, 2, and 3. And I didn't have a PS3, so I never played them on, obviously, on there. So I don't know if you guys are excited. Obviously, other than Gray, if you guys are excited.
Very excited. Want to see it packed in with the PS4 for a price of $350. What about you, DB?
Yeah, it seems like it's going to fill that kind of Master Chief Collection niche for the PS4, is that here's a great collection of games that are premiere on the PlayStation console. I think it's a nice stopgap filler for the fall as well, since I had to push back Uncharted 3, and as we talked about on the last episode, where Sony investors call have talked about their first-party games are not, they don't have a whole lot coming out this fall, so it seems like a good filler there. I own all three on the PS3, so I'm probably not going to be rushing out to get it, but again, as we've talked about with remastered games, it's great to have it in high res and expose it to more people.
Yeah, it should be cool. Obviously, great if the price point's right, you're gonna pick that up, right?
Yeah, I think definitely would like to get that packed in with the PS4, like Master Chief is now. But I'd love to just go back. I never played 1. I bought 3, never opened it. But 2 was my favorite of the half dozen games I have for the PS3. 2 is definitely my favorite. Uncharted 2 is definitely my favorite PlayStation game, PlayStation 3 game. So I think I would love to experience the whole trilogy, remastered on the PS4. I think that would be a good reason. For me, there's no other titles on the PS4 right now tugging at me except for that one.
Cool. And then finally, we got LEGO Worlds, which is actually out now on Steam Early Access, and it is currently $14.99, and is basically a Minecraft competitor. So it's a procedural generated worlds that are made up when you go into the game, and you can deconstruct the world and rebuild it. There's a couple different things that you can do, though, or there's one different thing as far as the terrain is. So instead of, you can do, you know, brick by brick if you want to, but there's also, so say there's like a mountain area or even just a flat land, you can kind of like pick an area there and just kind of lift the whole thing up, you know, all at once instead of doing it brick by brick, which I thought was kind of cool. They kind of show that in the trailer. You can, you know, resize it, you know, just, you know, really quick. You don't have to go, you know, brick by brick and, kind of like you have to do in Minecraft where you have to do everything manually. So that's kind of cool. And I'm assuming they, hopefully there would be other, kind of different tools like that where you can just, you know, pick a whole section and, you know, flatten it out or, you know, build it up, you know, really quick. Also, some of the other things that you can do are there is the character editors where you can customize your characters. Obviously, I think one of the things that LEGO is known for that you can do. Actually, it says both friendly and fearsome. So I guess, you know, the enemies in the world you can potentially customize, which would be kind of cool. There's vehicles in this one. So you can, you know, race cars, you know, go underwater and, you know, have airplanes or helicopters. So that's cool. One of the things was just kind of interesting. It says you can play with a select number of real-life LEGO sets taken from classic and current LEGO themes. So I don't know, I'm assuming they're already in the game, or I don't know if you can, you know, somehow like scan it in, or, you know, just like scan a barcode or something. They don't really go into detail, but I'm assuming it's just like in the game, you know, like they have the pirate set or the you know, LEGO City, you know, generated set that comes up. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, it's kind of interesting that, you know, you got LEGO, you know, going after that Minecraft card or crowd, excuse me. And actually, I saw a lot of buzz on different Facebook groups that I'm on, where people were like, "Oh, you know what? This looks, you know, so awesome and so cool." And it's kind of interesting because, you know, some people would comment and was like, "Well, it's just kind of a Minecraft, you know, it's basically like Minecraft, or maybe a little bit more detailed." And then that original poster would be like, "Oh no, this is gonna be like a way better." So I don't, maybe it's just because it's the Legos, you know, it's that nostalgia thing that kicks in. I don't know. What do you guys think, Gray?
Yeah, I think first of all, I just thought the trailer was exceptionally done. Just great job. Some things stood out at me, and at the end of it, I was like, this gives Microsoft the reason to do Minecraft too. But the world creation and editing capabilities, just so quick and easy to add, you know, or change the landscape. I thought that was very awesome. You know, you kind of mentioned how it works. You get a much finer granularity to anything you want to build. So, you know, if you want to have, you know, something with a lot more detail in it, you know, more detail than a 3x3 block, you can definitely do that. There's a lot more detail there. I do think it's kind of odd, you know, when you first walk into Minecraft, everything's very boxy. And I think it's kind of odd that the world is, because it's made out of Legos, you get the little round things on the top that you're, you know, all the land is the little round things that you would clip another Lego into. That said, I love what they did with the characters. They just use, I mean, the characters look like characters in a video game. They're not, I mean, the when you take the hat off of a little guy, you see the receiver for the hat where it plugs in. Just like you do in the Lego movie. But, you know, they the characters, the bears and the camels and the little Lego people, they look great. And they look a lot better than the Minecraft blocky people. And you can just see that, hey, even if the world has to be blocky, the characters that live in it do not. And I thought that was very cool. And so, you know, after seeing it, I think it's definitely going to take some Minecraft a share away. A lot of people will try it. I'm sure a lot of people will just try it. But I think it's cool, and I think it's so smart because LEGO has so many IPs wrapped up from all the different LEGO sets that they can pretty much bring anything into this, you know? And that said, you know, I think it gives you an idea of where Minecraft can go with the Minecraft 2. You know, if they can one-up this in a year, then they can be back on top. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't. DB, did you get to see the video and the announcement?
Yeah, I did get to see it. Actually, I watched the trailer as well and almost plopped down my $15 right there to try it. But I'm actually kind of excited, Gray. We get to have a disagreement. I think that this isn't gonna chip away at Minecraft at all. I agree with you completely in terms of the level of detail, the ability for it to grab on to some of those properties, but those properties are going to come with price tags, and there's going to have to be some type of monetization that's in there that isn't necessarily in Minecraft. The biggest monetization in Minecraft are skins, you know, but the modding community in Minecraft is huge. You know, I think about my kids who are in elementary and middle school, and I work at a library where we get a lot of public school kids coming in after school, and they play Minecraft all the time. And the fact that you can pick up and just play Minecraft on any device, you know, whether it's your parents' phone or on your hand-me-down tablet, I think that Minecraft has a lot of that market share because it's so accessible. Where if this is going to have an early access kind of pay-to-play model, I think it could be a better game. Actually, I am more interested in playing this than I've ever been in Minecraft. And as much as my kids have tried to drag me into Minecraft, I am totally more interested in playing with this. I don't know that it's going to move the needle on chipping away at Minecraft's market share, though. Counterpoints? Prime, you want to saddle up in the middle of this somewhere?
No, you know what? I was actually thinking the same thing as Gray was talking, that the one thing that would kill this pretty quickly is if they start, you know, slamming you with, you know, here's a $10 or $15, you know, playset, you know, and each playset's going to be, you know, that high. And it kind of reminds me of the new game that's going to come out this fall, LEGO Dimensions, which is, you know, their version of the Skylanders and Disney Infinity. That thing is way more than, you know, the Skylanders and Disney Infinity. It's going to be coming out, well, the you know, what do you call it? The beginner kit's going to be, you know, $99. You know, everything, you know, Disney Infinity, I think, is around 70 or 75. And I'm not sure about Skylanders. It's I think actually even lower than that for the...
About the same price. Skylanders is the same price.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I can see them, you know, kind of just, you know, nickel and diming you to death with, you know, all these different packs and stuff. It'll be interesting to see once it, you know, comes out on... If it ever comes out on retail, I'm assuming it would eventually, you know, how they price it, you know, that's probably going to be the thing to watch.
Great. All my joking about disagreements aside, I hope that you're right. I hope that it chips into Minecraft's market share and that, you know, YouTubers start streaming this and commenting on it and creating different games, you know, where my kids are playing Hunger Games on Minecraft and different chase games. You know, I really hope that LEGO Worlds finds a foothold because it has the potential to be super creative and really fun. You know, it looks like a good LEGO game. And to be able to really mold and shape that entire world, it could be amazing. And I hope that Traveler's Tales can pull it off. You know, I really do.
Well, it looks really good, and you know, for early access, it looks pretty solid. And I think you know, there's going to be your hardcore Minecraft people who will stay with Minecraft. You'll have a whole bunch of those guys who will come over, try this, and then probably go back. And you'll probably have some brand new people get into this type of open world building world because it is LEGO and it does have the LEGO name. And Minecraft, you know, that name, unless you know what Minecraft is, it kind of sounds odd. Where everybody knows LEGO. So I think it can only, for that type of game and that type of community, I think it only does good things. It may divide the community a little bit, but I think it'll also pressure Minecraft guys to maybe step it up a little bit too. So we'll have to see. Now, it's interesting that this is on, this came out on Steam, because you wanted to talk about something you saw that Steam did this week.
Ah, master of the segue. Yeah, so... So yeah, Steam came out and announced that they were going to be issuing up refunds, you know, and the refund is actually really kind of interesting the way that they're doing it, that if you've played the game after release for less than 2 hours, you can get a refund. So if your Steam clock shows that you've only been playing less than 2 hours, you could ask for a refund. If it's pre-release, like if you, there's, you know, as we were just talking about with LEGO Worlds, you know, that it's in early access. There's a ton of games up now on Steam that are early access, and you know, on the casual adult gamer site, there was a good, who was it? Was it Mace or Zeus that had a good article? It was Zeus that had a good article about if people invest into early access stuff. And so this allows users to take that plunge into something that looks interesting as an early access person, and if they don't like it, they can request a refund. It also has raised a couple questions on from some or smaller indie developers where their games are, you know, things like Proteus or even like Papers, Please, which may not be a super long game, but you could get kind of the meaning out of the game within an hour, certainly within 2 hours of it. And if it creates kind of an economic model that discourages small indie artsy kind of game publishers who want to make a narrative statement or a artistic statement with their game, if their games aren't going to last more than 2 hours, can somebody buy it and then return it after investing all of it? You know, that said, I think it's also a really good feature for the wealth of early access games that are out there. You know, so that if you do get something and it looks really good, but the developers stop supporting it, that you can bail out. You know, I bring it up in part because I think it's an interesting piece. You know, we've talked about Steam before, but also because I took advantage of it this week. That a couple, you know, on previous podcasts I've talked about ponying up some cash for Infinite Crisis, which was the Turbine MOBA based on DC characters. And my clock has me playing 7 hours of it. But the developer announced that they're shutting it down in August, and Steam is providing refunds to those that purchased one of the starter bundles. So I took advantage of it. I got my $10 back. You know, I kind of feel like Turbine is a really good developer. They certainly should have the money to be able to go on and do something else, but at the same time, the game is no longer, you know, I bought it and now it's no longer working. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Did you guys have any thoughts? You know, is your Steam library big enough that this makes a difference? Do you see that this could be implemented on a PSN or Xbox store?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it while you're talking, and it's just it's kind of hard because on one hand, this is a good one of the reasons why, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, I don't want to buy digital because, you know, you can't return things and you can't resell it, and, you know, this is kind of dashing at least the first part about not being able to return it. Granted, it's only, you know, you can play 2 hours, but still, you know, 2 hours and you got a pretty good handle on if you like a game or not. Usually, I would think. But on the other hand, you know, you don't, like you're saying about the indie titles, you know, some of them you could probably, you know, get your fill in within, you know, like an hour and a half or so, 2 hours, and, you know, might kind of, you know, squash that development, you know, those people developing games and, you know, stuff like that. I don't know, it's man, like I said, they're just like two different sides, and it's just kind of hard to really pick one and, you know, trying to go with it, and I don't know. Gray, what do you think?
You know, I think they're trying to make consumers happy, and it's difficult because manufacturers, they don't want to, you know, they don't want to everybody trying the game out and not buying it, you know? So I think they're trying to split the middle here. I think it's a good thing. If I bought a game and a half an hour in, I'm like, this game's horrible. You know, I want to get my money back. And, you know, you can't do that. If you go to a store, typically, correct me if I'm wrong, if you go to the store and you buy an Xbox One game and you open it, they typically will not take it back. You know, that's been my experience anyways. Tell me if I'm wrong. But what,
no, know, that's true.
Is that the true? Yeah. But, you know, digital,
yeah,
there's
that's true.
There's no physical package with digital, so there's not that big barrier there. And so, you know, I think it may be a little too gracious. Maybe 2 hours is too long. You know, I don't know, but I appreciate the fact that they're doing that, and I do think they should allow people to sell used games when you know, if they have things in their collection, they want to sell it, trade it on Steam. You know, I think that's the next step they need to get into. I think that'd be very cool.
Yeah, I think it is a really good thing for at least the Steam Early Access, because obviously those games are you know, still in development. They're still, you know, working on them. So it's, you know, perfect for that. But as far as, you know, just the regular, I don't know, it's just kind of hard. I don't, at least not in the foreseeable future, see anything like this coming to, you know, like Xbox Live or PSN anytime soon. I don't think, at least. I don't know, maybe PSN, because they seem to be, you know, the renegades lately, kind of just doing things, you know, off the cuff. But I really don't see Microsoft doing this anytime soon. Although I know they've done some refunds every once in a while, like I think with the Master Chief Collection they did when it was having those problems at the beginning, you know, when it first came out. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this, you know, catches on, or if it, you know, they just shut it down. What did they have recently? It was something on Steam that they were trying out. Oh, it was the mods, I think. The you can buy a mods, the payable mods, but they eventually kind of took that down because people were kind of complaining about it, and, you know, people thought that, you know, it was mods, you know, you're not supposed to buy from, you know, you're not supposed to buy mods. So I don't know if this is going to turn out like this. Probably not. This is, seems a little bit, you know, more fair. So I guess we'll kind of see, you know, how it goes in the foreseeable future.
You know, I really do wish Xbox and PlayStation or Sony would do the refunds for digital content, something similar to this. Even if they only said, hey, after a half an hour. Or let's say, you know, you bought something, you never played it, and you want to return it. You know, and, you know, maybe it's within 2 weeks, like a store would be. You know, you get a week or two to return it. But I think, you know, I've known so many people where their kids get their controller and just downloaded a bunch of stuff, and the parents call up. They're like, sorry, we're not taking any of it back. It's like, you know, all you do is alienate your customers. You know, I won't, because that has happened to me. I will not put my credit card into my Xbox just for that reason. I won't put it into my PlayStation because they got hacked, but I won't put it into my Xbox because, you know, if somebody accidentally buys something, I want my money back. I don't want it. I think it was it was the expansion to Fallout 3. I didn't have the Fallout 3 game, right? But due to a comedy of errors, my and that was back when the 360 they had buy now on the front of the splash screen, the dashboard, and so I didn't even have the TV on, and my controller bought that expansion, and they wouldn't give me my money back. So I think it's something that has to. It's a fundamental consumer right to be able to get a refund for something that either that you didn't mean to purchase, or you know, that didn't live up to your expectations. Again, you shouldn't be able to play the whole game and return it, just like you shouldn't be able to eat your whole meal at a restaurant and return it. So but yeah, I mean, there's middle ground there, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, you bring up a really interesting kind of case study there, Gray, that things get bumped or it accidentally happens. It's not even a game you own. You know, I'm sitting here reading our show notes and my notes on my Android tablet, and I think the Google Play has a great way of doing this, that you have, I don't know if it's 10 minutes or 15 minutes, but it's no more than 15 to ask for a refund after you've hit buy. So in your case, you know, you hit it and you realize it, you know, you can ask for that refund within that short window. You know, I think on Android it certainly makes sense, because Android phones and tablets, their builds are so different based on the, you know, the provider you have and the model and what version it's running. And so, you know, maybe the new version of this game that's out, you know, like Temple Run, the Tomb Raider version of Temple Run that Prime you were talking about, it may not run on my phone. And so I buy it, and I realize it's just chugging along at 5 frames per second. I can turn that back in. I think a PC is a great example of that same way, that everybody's specs are going to be a little bit different. And so having a refund that's a short window like that makes sense for those purchases where it sounded really good, but it either was an accident or doesn't run on the rig that you have. Because otherwise, yeah, I can't do this at retail. I can't play it for a while and say, this doesn't work so well. I want to, or I don't really enjoy it. I'm going to take it back. So I could see them adjusting it, but I think you're right, Prime, that it's not going to be like the paid mods where they're going to totally back out of it by the next week. So it'll be curious to see what happens. Gray, we've stolen some of your news headlines. Do you want to follow up with any that we missed here? You had a couple Facebook Five pieces.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we were all excited about the same things. I was going to talk about LEGO Worlds, which we already talked about, and Uncharted. I did want to talk about, first of all, let me just say that the bandofgamers.net website is up. We're slowly releasing the backlog of podcasts we have, and I hope by next week's show, we will officially be on iTunes, so you'll be able to get the podcast from iTunes. But so that was my big announcement. The Band of Gamers site is up. I have you'll see in our graphics all of the regular cast has donated pictures of their guardians to help make that kind of Band of Brothers type of logo across the top. So that I thought that was very cool, and so you'll see it come into iTunes shortly. Besides that, I was very happy to see Splatoon. Now, I don't have a Wii U, but I was very happy to see the Splatoon reviews were really good. The game just looks like a lot of fun. DBQ, you didn't pick that up, or Prime. Neither of you guys picked up Splatoon, right?
So I have not picked up Splatoon yet, but this past Friday I was out of town with my family, and I dropped my wife off at a conference. And the conference happened to be 3 minutes away from a mall, and it happened to be a few minutes before the mall was opening, so my sons and I ran over to GameStop, which was the release of the new Wave 4 of amiibos, including some of the Fire Emblem amiibos and Pac-Man and Wario, but also the Splatoon amiibos. So it was my sons and I and a few other Nintendo diehards that were in line outside of GameStop for a couple amiibos, and I ended up picking up the Splatoon 3 pack. And so I know that I'm going to pick up this game. I've played the demo. I enjoyed the playthrough that I had. I'll probably wait until August, until some of the matchmaking comes in and they've added a few more maps into the rotation. But from the demos that I've played, I like the motion controls, that it's more of a up-down axis, kind of a Y axis. I think I'm getting that right? Y is vertical versus horizontal.
Yes.
And so, thanks. I appreciate that. But, so it allows that, the movement I thought was pretty good with the motion controls. And I picked up the amiibos, one, because amiibos are crazy, right? That I've sold amiibos for $50-some. I've purchased them and I've hunted some of them down. They've been so short supply. So I picked up the three Splatoon amiibos because all three of the Splatoon amiibos unlock another 10 challenge levels. So they add lots of other content to the game. So they end up being kind of DLC for the game. So I knew they were going to be short supply. I had some GameStop credit, and it seemed like a good way to pick something up that was going to be really hard to find down the road. But you, Prime, have any interest in Splatoon, or anybody there in your family that's interested in it?
I am interested in playing it eventually. I unfortunately did not pick it up yet, and I never did get a chance to play. I think there was a couple demos or betas or whatever you want to call them that they did. I didn't have a chance to download it and play it. So unfortunately, never got to play it. But from what I've read and seen, it looks like it's a pretty awesome game, and I like just the mechanic of being able to, once you put you spray the paint down, or the ink, I guess, since they're squids, you can kind of travel through that ink and, traverse the play area, kind of different than, other games. So it's going to be an interesting game to pick up eventually. I did not pick up any amiibos, just so you know. At least none of those. I do have some amiibos, but just non-Splatoon ones. So, but yeah, eventually I would like to pick up the game and check it out.
Well, I would love to hear from when you guys get the game, what you think about it, how you like it. It just looks pretty awesome to me. The last story I had was, It looks like there are a couple of new PS4s coming out. There was somebody spotted that, it's not announced, I don't think, but they did spot it being registered. And it looks like these both models use less power. Even the terabyte one, I guess, uses less power than the existing unit. So that brought up the question, will these also include a price drop? You know, typically if you make a smaller unit, you redesign a unit to make it less expensive to manufacture, you could also have a price drop. So what do you guys think? Prime, do you think the PS4 is, we'll see a price drop maybe announced at E3?
Oh, man. I'm just kind of going off how the 360 was back in the, back when it was, in full swing, and it took a long time for them to, drop the price. I think they did eventually. I think they released like a base model with, I don't know if it was like a 4 gig hard drive or something that was lower, but I mean, like the main system was always, I think like $300 or $250, whatever the price was at the time. So I don't know. I don't know if Sony, it's the regular PS4 right now is, selling like gangbusters. So I don't know if they might just, follow the same suit and just kind of wait until, it starts dying down as far as their sales, or if they want to, maybe that's your in Gray. That'll be the new system with the Nathan Drake collection in it. It'll be a lower price, so you can, finally pick that up. It'll be interesting to see if they do eventually, make that announcement. Although, they've, surprised pretty much everybody with, some of their announcements they've been doing, throughout the last couple of years, since they've announced the PS4, so you just never know.
Yeah, that would be very cool. And you make a good point. I mean, if it's selling like hotcakes now, why lower the price? But then on the other hand, the 360 did, I think, one April. And, it is $50 cheaper. Maybe they come out with two models. The terabyte stays at the 400, and maybe the 500 gig goes to 350. I don't know. What do you think, DB? Any thoughts on this?
I think I agree with Prime in terms of, they're selling well now. They don't need to make up any market share. They're leading that market share. That idea that of different hard drives being different SKUs and different price points that you had, Gray, Sony certainly did that last generation with the PS3, where you had different price points for, what did it start at, 80 and 20, and then 60 and 150, I don't even remember how many iterations of hard drives the PS3 went through in terms of its design. I wonder that the cheaper price may allow them to bundle a few more games with it. There's been Black Friday bundles of PS3s where they've given out two different games or download codes for two different games, and so maybe this allows them to do that without shaving a whole lot of margins off. Or, potentially it also allows them to produce a little bit cheaper unit so that when they create some type of Morpheus bundle, which I'm assuming we get some announcement or some conversation about at E3, it allows them to put a price point on that Morpheus bundle that's a little more palatable to mass market consumers, right? That if the PS4 is selling well to gamers and suddenly you throw on something that's virtual reality, you get a whole new market share out there of people that haven't even thought about video games because they, but they're willing to give virtual reality a go. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. We've got, less than 2 weeks before E3 to kind of see where people tip their hand, and I'm sure there's going to be a few more leaks, but also it's a good summertime segue, that E3 is always enjoyable, it's a good spectacle, but so are some good summertime movies as well. So, Gray, you had a topic of the week. Do we want to try to cover that this week?
Yeah, so next week's show is going to be our pre E3 show, and we're going to talk about all our predictions, and hopefully there's not too many more leaks that ruin them for us. But, that's going to be our hopes, our dreams, our fears of E3, so that'll be our show next week. This week, we're doing our third segment. It's a new part of the podcast. We typically only do two segments. Now we're doing a third, and this is going to be each of us have come up with good movies that were made into good video games. And, you know, you always hear that movies don't translate to video games. You know, any movie that has a video game, it stinks, like E.T. And any game that has a movie, it stinks, like Doom. So we're gonna just break down those walls today. And the way we're going to do this is we're each are going to be able to choose three games from the past that we thought that were based on a good movie that were good games. And I'll start. We'll do one game at a time. So I'll start, and my first game was on the Atari 2600, and it was The Empire Strikes Back. In this game, now of course everybody knows, Empire Strikes Back was a great movie, okay? So in this game, now the Atari 2600couldn't really do much. It really didn't have anything for graphics, but they found a way to make a good Star Wars game. You had a little snow speeder that could go left and right along the screen. And on the bottom of the screen, you had like this wavy kind of like wave that was supposed to, you know, look like the landscape and snow. And then you had mountains in the background. And as you went through the side-scroller, kind of pre-Defender type of look, your ship would have to shoot walkers. And the walkers would walk towards your base. And you would have to zip, and you could only, they were only vulnerable in a couple of different spots, and you would fly back and forth and back and forth, and they would be shooting you, and you would be shooting them. And over time, the walkers would get faster and faster. And I, as a young kid, spent way too much time playing this game. It did get very repetitive after a while. There wasn't like multiple levels like Pac-Man or... it almost kind of devolved into that whole Space Invaders thing where it just goes faster and faster and faster and faster until you die. But lots of fun. It was great to just, you crank up the Star Wars soundtrack and play this game, and you felt like you were in the movie. So that is my first good game based on a good movie. And DBQ, I'm going to throw it to you. What is your first good game based on a good movie?
My first game, I'm going to defer and come back to it because I want to let Prime talk about his first game because it's a nice segue coming off of the Atari Star Wars games. I remember playing those great. I remember playing that and the Return of the Jedi one where you're kind of going at the Death Star. But Prime, I want you to talk about yours because I've got some very fond memories of it, opening it up on Christmas morning and blasting that soundtrack of that game that you're going to talk about. So take it away, please.
All right. So actually, I don't remember those Atari 2600 games. I was actually pretty young there, probably like 5 or 6. So I don't remember those, the Empire or the Return of the Jedi. But back on the Super Nintendo, and actually I'm going to group all three of these games kind of together. They actually came out with the New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. I believe they had all three video games, and it was just basically like a side-scrolling game. You know, start from the left, and you kind of keep going, kind of just through each, part of each movie. You know, like say for Star Wars, you start off on Tatooine, you go through that. You might do that Mos Eisley, and then you kind of progress, as you go through the game. But even now, I can just remember, playing those games, just thought, it was the coolest thing. You can shoot, you're playing as Luke, you can shoot and, could use your lightsaber, after a certain point. So it was just a really, really cool games that were back out on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. And that was actually the first one that popped into my head because, the graphics were good, for the time. And even today, they're kind of just, the cartoony kind of looking Star Wars characters, but it was just a great game. Kind of just, I think, kind of everything back from then is kind of stands the test of time as far as graphics and stuff. But what do you guys think? DB, you had some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I got the first Super Star Wars for the Super Nintendo as a Christmas gift, probably sometime as, I don't know, it must have been maybe a teenager, late teens. But I really enjoyed that game. I owned both that and Empire Strikes Back. I loved Empire and its use of like force powers, and I still remember the Dagobah levels and the final Cloud City level with fighting Vader and the different sword play there. So, yeah, they did a really good job. I'm trying to remember. I think that, for some reason, I want to say that that was like THQ was a developer, but they really seem to do a good job of capturing kind of the environment and the essence of Star Wars and the fun there too. So I've got another trilogy that I'll use my my first go on, and mine is actually a follow-up to a trilogy. So a couple years ago, probably 2008-2009, that there was some rumblings about Telltale doing a Back to the Future adventure game. So, you know, tying into our 80s nostalgia here in terms of Star Wars and Back to the Future series, the Telltale game kind of picks up after the third movie, and Marty McFly goes back to Doc's shop, right, from the first movie, and there, you know, he's not there, and they're having a rummage sale and trying to get rid of Doc's stuff because Doc is off back in the 1800s. But it's a five-part Telltale game. It was still back when Telltale was doing kind of more traditional adventure games where you were kind of looking for this thing to put into that thing to solve the puzzle, versus Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, where it very much is just kind of a narrative. But to me, that five-episode episodic game of Telltale's Adventure Back to the Future, it really kind of captured some of the fun and the quirkiness of the Back to the Future series. So that's my first go. How about you, Gray? Ready for round two?
Round two, yes. And my second one is one of the very few games that I ever totally completed, like just frustratingly made sure I got it through. And actually, my neighbor was trying to do it at the same time. And this was a game for the Genesis, and it was called Jurassic Park. And I think people agree, Jurassic Park, pretty dang good movie. And Jurassic Park the game on Genesis, another side-scroller, kind of jump up multiple levels, going up and down the screen. And this game was unique in the fact that you could play through the game as either a human, as Alan Grant, or as a raptor. So I didn't even know what to do there, so I just played as a human. And it was challenging, but it was fun. You know, the Genesis has that great sound system, so you have that great, you know, 8-bit type of music going on, and you know suspense, you know, kind of almost like Pitfall type of suspense, you know, with the music in the background. But just so many great memories of playing through that game, Jurassic Park on the Genesis. A lot of fun. And so that's my game number two. Let's stay in order. So Prime, you'll be next.
Okay, so for my second and actually final one, because I couldn't think of why, I did the Star Wars ones, or I kind of clumped those together. So my last one here is X-Men Origins Wolverine, the game, which movie, okay, I thought it was good. It wasn't, you know, the best in the world as far as all the X-Men game, or X-Men movies, but you know, it was decent. But the game was actually pretty good. They actually didn't pull any punches on this game, so it was, you know, pretty violent and kind of bloody. You know, he wasn't just going against, you know, robots or aliens, you know, that were just, you know, squirting, you know, green blood or something. So he was actually going against, you know, soldiers and, you know, human characters. And it kind of played a little like God of War, so those kind of movements, you know, you can chain your combos together, and then, you know, if there's some big mutant or robot that you did have to, you know, fight against, you can, you know, climb on top of it and, you know, press whatever button to, you know, kind of just smash on it. So it, you know, it was a really well done game. Really, graphics were great. You know, this was back on the 360 and PS3, I believe it came out on both of those. And you know, it was just overall, I thought it was, you know, an excellent game, you know, for the time and, you know, for the property. So How about you, DP? What do you got? DB, what do you got next?
I remember that game as well, Prime, and I do remember it getting reviewed pretty well. It did play kind of like God of War. Came out around the same time as the Captain America game, I think, which kind of played like that. Well, I guess most character action games, if they didn't know what to do with them, they kind of made it a God of War clone. But doesn't mean it was a bad game, and you're right, it was a fun game. So I'm going to stick with your Marvel theme there, and I'm going to use my second movie tie-in as the Xbox... Xbox One, right? The Xbox original version of Spider-Man 2. So Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi movies from the early 2000s. This was the Dr. Octopus one. Spider-Man 2 came out on Xbox original, also on PS2 and GameCube, and it had a really nice kind of open world. You know, I played one of the original Spider-Man games on the PlayStation 1, back at PS1, back in the day. It was done by, Iguana Software, that later went on to do some Tony Hawk stuff or some Guitar Hero stuff, as all Activision games eventually get funneled into one of their big franchises. But I was always loved the idea of kind of flowing around in a big New York as Spider-Man and swinging around the city, and this game really captured it really well. I played the Amazing Spider-Man game that came out on the PS3 and 360. I played through that, actually finished that story, and enjoyed the swinging around, but nothing has really kind of sucked me into a open world game, kind of no more so than that Spider-Man 2 game, where you can be, you get different pop-ups and you're saving people and stopping crime and just having fun, kind of free-flowing, swinging through the city. So, there's my second game. How about you, Gray? Ready for last and final round here?
Final Jeopardy. I mean, the final round of good games that came from good movies, and I'm going to go back to Star Wars. And I think, most kids who saw Star Wars wanted to be in the X-Wing, taking on Darth Vader, blowing up, the Death Star. And you actually got a chance to do that with X-Wing on the PC. So X-Wing, it was like a flight simulator in space, and I love flight sims. I remember playing my first flight sim on my first IBM PC and just always enjoyed flight sims, and so really got into this game. This is the game that made me go out and buy a joystick, a really nice joystick with the hat controller, and again, one of those very rare games that I actually finished the whole game. I got to the end, I blew up the Death Star, and I love the missions. There were escort missions, but I thought the space combat was nailed. Now there's a very popular sequel to this called TIE Fighter. I didn't want to play that because I didn't want to be the bad guy. I know my brother did it, and a lot of other people did. But there's also X-Wing Alliance, which we talked about in a previous show, which is a lot of fun. But just a great game. Now, because Prime doesn't have a third, I'm going to take his third too and say that my fourth great game based on a movie is Jedi Knight. Now, Jedi Knight, Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight, it's you don't actually play as the characters in Star Wars, but it is just a phenomenal first-person shooter in the whole Doom 2 type of era. But the thing that made it different was it had some really cool cutscenes, at least for the beginnings of CD-ROMs and full motion video. Had some really cool cutscenes and just a lot of fun. And I think I have all of the Jedi Knight games, like the entire series, but the original Jedi Knight game was just a joy to play, and I actually got into building levels and got my kids into building levels and maps and had a lot of fun with that. With that, we'll jump over Prime because he didn't have a third and I just took his spot. And DB, you want to finish it off and with your third good game from a good movie?
Yeah, no problem. And it's only taken 11 episodes for you to use your hosting ability to take over some of our content, so no problem. Nah, I'm just kidding. But X-Wing was a great game. I love that game. I agree with you, Gray. I ended up buying it back on, you know, I must have been in high school. It came on like 8 different 3.5-inch floppy disks, and I remember installing those on a 486 computer. It was the first time I bought a joystick as well, because after playing it with a mouse and keyboard for a while, I knew I wanted a joystick. But yeah, it was, a lot of it was escort missions, but it was so much fun just being able to toggle your, you know, your shields, front deflector shields and rear deflector shields based on where the enemies were coming, and doing strafing runs. It was a joy to play. So, and it's up on Steam, it's up on Good Old Games. Good Old Games, for the next couple weeks here in June, is having a summer sale. Steam always comes up with a summer sale in July. So for anybody that has that same kind of nostalgia, it's a great way to go and get it and be able to play it on a modern system. So for my final game, I'm going to take a cue from Gray here and name a game that's based on a movie property, a movie world, but not actually directly the events of a movie. So I'm going to take my final game as The Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay. So this was it kind of ideally comes out, takes place in the world of Pitch Black and The Chronicles of Riddick, the Vin Diesel movies. You know, say what you want about the quality of those movies, I still think the first Pitch Black is kind of a pretty good horror movie that holds up in terms of like sci-fi, horror-y, kind of aliens-like. But Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay is a first-person action game, but it has a lot of stealth in it and really creates a really neat world and some really cool mechanics. They did some nice things with first-person stealth, and as I mentioned earlier, I had been playing the Wolfenstein New Order, and the designers of that, a lot of them were key members on the Starbreeze development team, which created Escape from Butcher Bay. So, good game. You can find it. They did a re-release, or they did a new game called, I think they just called it Riddick, on the 360, but it came packaged with Escape from Butcher Bay, so maybe people have played it that way. It's also out on Steam, but real fun game, good use of some neat mechanics there. So that wraps up my movie games as well. Any final thoughts, Prime, since you we skipped over you?
I just want to honorable mention a couple more Star Wars games. Shadow of the Empire on the N64 and Rogue Squadron. I think there's a couple games on the GameCube. So those are, once again, I don't think you played any of the like the main characters from Star Wars, just kind of background secondary characters. And I believe Shadow of the Empire was actually a totally brand new story that they had made up. So that was just kind of two that I wanted to mention real quick.
I always wanted to play Rogue Squadron. I was a big Rebel Assault fan on the PC. Another great game with a lot of full motion video and CD version that was awesome. But always wanted to go back and play Rogue Squadron on the GameCube. Good choices.
Yeah, those are, I think, kind of the gold standard for the Hoth levels. I think they both had Hoth levels, and the first and second one had anyone in there. They just kind of expanded on them and, you know, just fly around and go through the legs of the AT-ATs, or AT-STs, I think, if I remember correctly. You know, and, you know, you have to kind of shoot out that grappling hook and, you know, circle around them and, you know, before they'd fall down, and you could just, you know, blow them up. So they were really fun.
Well, that's really cool, and I can't wait to see Battlefront at E3, and that's a good segue into a reminder that next week the show is going to be our E3 predictions, hopes, fears, and desires, Battlefront being one of mine. And we're going to have an abridged news section, because I'm sure all the news will be about E3 anyways, so we're really going to focus on that. Guys, before I take us out, any final words? We'll start with you, DB.
No, Gray, thanks a lot again for all the work getting the Band of Gamers site up and going and getting these up online so that people can hear and join the community. Come find us on the Casual Adult Gamers forums to keep the discussion going as we head into E3.
Yeah, please, casualadultgamers.com and bandofgamers.net, two great sites to check out. Prime, anything else you want to add before we close out the show?
No, I just want to mention the only announcement I have is I'll be on vacation starting next Friday, so hopefully I can make that E3 show the previous day. I won't be too busy packing, you know, and getting everything ready, so hopefully I'll be on that show, and then I will just get a lot of rest. Unfortunately, it is during E3, so I'm going to have to probably come back when I get back, probably watch all the conferences and all that, so... But I'll have my phone so I can at least see all the stuff coming through, at least. So that should be good.
Yeah, you'll be able to pick through it on the news sites and on the online and not have to sit through all the boring parts. So we'll definitely enjoy your vacation. And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Band of Gamers podcast. I had a lot of fun talking with the guys about our favorite games based on good movies, and I hope you had a fun time listening to it. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Greylock3491. On behalf of DBQ Hams and Osiris Prime, thank you for listening to this week's show. If you have any comments on anything we discussed this week, or want to express your own opinions on the on the topics we discussed, please feel free to comment on this show's post over at bandofgamers.net, or drop us an email at podcast@bandofgamers.net. With that said, thanks again for listening, and until next time, peace.